All right, I'll go ahead and call to order for the regular. I'll go ahead and call to order for the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting, February 16th. If the audience will join the board in the pledge, please.
I pledge allegiance to the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Next is public comment, section number one. This comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. Not seeing anybody moving to the mic. Agency reports, legal aid annual report, Karen Forbes. Have a seat right here at the desk. Thank you very much.
Good morning.
My
name is Karen Forbes. I am the new executive director for the Legal Aid Society of Scrooge County, just across the street here. I became a director in October of 2015, beginning of October. Our previous director, Tara Van Brederode, took a job with the Iowa Professional Regulations Commission. So she's now in Des Moines. We now have a new staff attorney that has taken the vacancy that was left by Tara. Her name is Peggy Nicolotti. She's a recent graduate from Drake University. I have been with the Legal Aid Society of Scrooge County as an attorney since 2008, and I was actually an intern when I was at Drake University Law School in 2002. So I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad that I'm proud of the job that we do here. We have been in Scrooge County for now 42 years, and we represent residents of Scrooge County in civil legal matters who are 125% or below of the federal poverty guidelines. So for a family of four, the gross income limit, the very top that they could make, is $2,531.25 per month, and that is based on the new federal poverty guidelines that just came out last month. They have to have liquid cash resources of less than $1,000, less than $2,000 in personal property, and homestead equity of less than $15,000. So these are people that really cannot afford legal services. We take only civil cases, and we only take non-fee-generating civil cases, with the exception of Social Security disability cases, mostly because those cases are hard to place. There's only one or two attorneys in Story County that actually practice in Social Security disability. So that means we don't take contingency fee cases. We don't sue people for money or property, except in some specific small claims cases where there would be no contingency fee. We don't do cases where someone would have a right to court-appointed counsel, so we don't do criminal matters. We don't do child in need of assistance cases, juvenile cases. We don't do civil contempt cases where the person may have jail time. They would also have a right to court-appointed counsel in those cases. We also don't do bankruptcy cases. The majority of our caseload is family law, so these are divorce cases, custody cases, modifications, helping people get child support, that kind of thing. We establish guardianships and conservatorships. We draft simple wills. We do powers of attorneys, advance directives. Lots of landlord-tenant cases where our clients are being evicted or they're being sued for some sort of back rent, and some debtor-creditor cases short of bankruptcy. A lot of people wonder if we're affiliated with Iowa Legal Aid and how we're different. We are not affiliated with Iowa Legal Aid. We do not take any federal funding. All of our funding is local through this county, through the cities that are within Story County. We get funding from Central Iowa Community Services, the Iowa State University, GSB, and United Way, things like that. We see some various grants from people for specific projects, and I'll talk about that in a minute. Because we don't receive federal money, we are not bound by federal rules for taking clients like Iowa Legal Aid is. So that means we can take undocumented citizens of Story County. That also means that we can take people with felony records, even if their felony record is, you know, from 10 years ago and they've since reformed. Iowa Legal Aid can't take them. Generally, and we do. We don't cherry pick our cases. We also since we're such a small office and we are able to meet needs of a smaller population, we don't require things like, in family law cases, Iowa legal aid requires a domestic violence component. Because of the size of their office, they have to do that. They have to cherry pick their cases. And we don't do that. If you qualify and you meet income and residency, we don't have a conflict. Kind of case we take, you get on our waiting list. We will take your case. Another difference is that we, because we're smaller, we're able to represent clients from the beginning of their case to the end of their case. So it's more like what you would get if you went to a private attorney. Iowa Legal Aid sometimes refers people to self-representation forms. And in divorces and family law cases, you know, that can be difficult for people to navigate on their own, even the simple ones. So instead, we help people from the beginning to end, and if there is a case that needs to be filed, we will file it for them and help them do that. We also don't give advice until somebody becomes a client in our office, which means that they have to go through the intake process and they have to actually sit down with an attorney, so we don't try to figure out what's going on in a five-minute phone call. We operate, our office has three full-time attorneys. Like I said, we have a part-time office manager, we have a part-time receptionist. We work with ISU for, we have 2 to 3 ISU work study students that help with also receptionist duties. And last year, with all of that, we represented 422 families in the last fiscal year. These are all Story County residents. We reported 5,592.82 hours of a total attorney time, and of that, 4,633.39 hours were in direct attorney-client contact. We also work with various human service providers in Story County and surrounding communities. When we meet with when our attorneys brainstorm in the office, a lot of times we look at the whole case and we try to figure out if there are any other services that our clients are not receiving that they could be receiving in order to help them with stability and with their quality of life. So we work with them. Another entity we work with is the Animal Rescue League of Iowa. We have two shelter cats that we foster in our office. And we've been working with them for about a year now, and they have had a wonderful calming effect on our clients, and it's worked out really well. So we like working with them. A couple of new projects that we are piloting this year. We have received a grant from United Way to specifically pilot a volunteer lawyers project just for Story County and for the attorneys in Story County. We have a really good relationship with the bar, and it's our understanding that the Iowa VLP project doesn't really work in Story County for some reason. So we are looking for help with people that are just over our guidelines, probably 150% or below, that still can't afford attorneys but don't meet our income and residency requirements. And we are looking to start that this spring. We've hired a new work study student to help us get that program off the ground. The other thing we're doing, another program, is that we are working with the Iowa State University Spanish Department. We have run into an issue several times a year where we get clients that only speak Spanish or they speak very broken English. And then we have a family member in on client meetings, and we have no idea if what we're saying to the family member to try to interpret is actually what we're saying and if it's being interpreted correctly. So our office manager, Melissa Murray, had the idea of contacting the ISU Spanish department to see if they'd be willing to work with us on translation services. And they decided that was a good idea for their department, too. And so service in our office is now required for students to receive a minor in Spanish translation and interpretation services.
Wow.
Yeah. So they provide the interpretation for client meetings as needed. And, again, this only happens a couple times a year. When it's needed, it's really needed, but it doesn't happen very often. So when that is not a need, they are going to translate some common forms and letters, and they're going to help with translating our website into Spanish. So we've got a stockpile of stuff ready for when it does happen. So those are the two new projects that we're working on for this year, and we're very excited about it. We're extremely grateful for the very long history of support we received from the people of Story County. We can't continue to do this work without you and your continued support, and we are very committed to the people of Story County to provide quality legal representation to people that cannot afford it and to help them achieve stability for themselves and for their families. So thank you.
Well, it sounds like, you know, when you look at the numbers and the people that you've served over a period of years and continue to serve in an outstanding way, but can you recall just a moment or a situation without identifying names of individuals that you and your staff probably found it most trying? I would assume since you're dealing with divorce cases and other things, you look at what I would call the feeling that the clients feel like you really helped them work through their issues, but are there a situation that calls to mind that really tests your staff's ability to function with that smile all the time on your face?
Yes. Thank goodness we have the cast for that situation. But I, yes, in fact, one case that I had recently, I had a client. Again, we don't cherry pick our cases, so we tend to get the bad with the good, just like a private practice would. And I had a client that has a severe alcohol history and was trying to get custody of children or visitation or something. And I really liked this client, and I knew she had a problem. And so it broke my heart because I wanted to, you know, just be able to fix everything and make it better. And I can't do that for them. But what I can do is encourage them, especially when they don't have the support system without us. And one thing that I will never forget that she told me was when she was going through residential treatment very recently, and I was encouraging her to stick with the program, she said, "You're the very first person that's ever said to me that I could do it." And so sometimes, you know, and I don't want to be, you know, their sole support system, but I like to, you know, kind of encourage them along and to tell them that, you know, they really can do it. And they can turn their life around if they want to, and to use the resources that are available to them. So that's one case where, in particular.
Thank you. Two quick questions. But first of all, thank you very much for stepping in for Tara. We really enjoyed her and have appreciated our relationship with Legal Aid through the years. Talk for just a minute about your waiting list, if you wouldn't mind.
Our waiting list generally runs between 1 and 3 months. Right now, we're on the short end of that, so we're running about at 1 month for services, and that's pretty short and pretty typical. It's nice now that with that transition, we had to slow our caseload down to do the transition, and Tara had to stop taking cases because she was leaving. But now that we have our new attorney on board, she's very eager and excited to take new cases, and she's learning a lot very quickly. And so we were able to cut that wait list down.
Super. Second question is, all things being equal, and I understand that rents are less here in Nevada, and money is really, really tight the way you're funded. What's the proper geographic location in Story County for legal aid if money were not the issue?
Ames. Most of our clients, because Ames is the largest city, most of our clients come from Ames. And we experience the most trouble with transportation issues for people who are living in Ames. And so we would love to be in Ames. Again, rent's the issue. We have the rent at where we're at right now is a lot less expensive than it would be in Ames. But I think we would be better serving people, especially now that we do electronic filing, so we don't have to drive to the courthouse as much to meet with judges and things. We do it all electronically and by phone calls now. So it would be much easier for us to have an office in Ames. We'd love to do that.
Thank you very much. Yeah, that's just something I hope that this board will keep in mind. As I'm nothing imminent, but there will be opportunities in the future for us to keep something like this in mind.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next is consideration of minutes from February 9th. And the canvas for the Ballard Innovative School vote.
You want to take them together or separate?
Do them both together.
Okay. Move approval of the September 9th and canvas as well as the minutes.
Second. The motion and the second. Any additions or corrections? Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Two. Aye. Those have been approved. Personnel actions.
Move approval as submitted.
Second. Motion and the second. Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Two. Aye. Those have been approved. Consent agenda as listed, gentlemen.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion to second. Anything further? Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Two. Aye. Looks like we go to discussion consideration of asset recommendations. Deb Shiproff.
Deb, how was Mexico?
It was wonderful. I highly recommend it to everyone. Nice to get a little bit of a break and but come back and realize it's still winter.
So you can remind us all that. Okay.
Exactly. But later this week, it's warming up, so we'll have some early signs of spring ahead of us. Well, good morning, Board. I'm here to talk with you about the asset recommendations for fiscal year 17. Before I jump into those, I do want to just highlight a few things that went through the process this year. One of the things that the volunteers and staff did with agencies who are impacted by the Medicaid managed care implementation is we spent some time discussing with those agencies, how they were preparing for the change, and B, what potential impacts they see in their respective agencies with changes. And we got varying degrees of responses just because of the implementation not quite happening yet, but plans are certainly in place for those agencies as they ramp up for the changes. And I think we'll continue having opportunities and talking with the agencies throughout the next year on, the good things about the change, the challenging things about the change, and what direction some of those agencies may need to go. But we thought it was important to have those discussions and hope the agencies felt that that asset was listening. The other thing we did a little bit different this year is instead of having four nights of panel hearings, we organized that into three nights. And so one night was a little bit longer, but we think it worked for the volunteers, and we were usually done by 7:30 at night. For the last 2 to 3 years, we have had hearings. Those hearings used to be four nights. We've had those structured at two nights, and so they run a little bit long until about 8:30, 9 o'clock at night, but we get them done in two nights, and that seems to work well for the agencies and the volunteers. So we're continuing to look at ways of making the process a little more accommodating for everyone involved. And then lastly, we took a look at the agencies that either have a new executive director like Karen or are in the process of looking for a new executive director within the past year. So we have 9 out of the 31 agencies that have new leadership. And the asset administrative team is looking at ways of reaching out to those new executive directors in a more proactive way and bringing them on board with the asset process and hopefully addressing any questions or concerns early on instead of waiting until the actual budgeting process. So we're trying to keep an eye on that as well. So for the recommendations, you have those before you. And I wanted to highlight a few of the recommendations. Under the general basic funds, there's about 114% increase to funding to RSVP transportation. The reason for that is they have just continued to see a spike or a demand in their transportation requests. They use their volunteers to match up with people in the community who need a ride. And these aren't necessarily ongoing trips. It might be a trip to the doctor. It might be a trip to the grocery store. It might be a trip to the bank. But they just continue to see this demand. And as a result of that, they have hired a part-time coordinator to help coordinate all of that service. And they've got a scheduling platform. So if there is somebody who's interested in a trip, they can go online and schedule that trip. Or, of course, they can just call in and schedule that trip as well. So with transportation being a priority of the counties, and we went through a year-long facilitation process and coordinating transportation, that is the reason for the increase behind that particular allocation.
And I thought it was interesting that was one of the very few places where the recommendation is higher than the request.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and so it's 114%, but it's really only $1,000, and I think it's $1,000 well spent to try to enhance that program.
Yeah, exactly.
Have they picked up anything through Mary Greeley? You remember about a year and a half ago, we sat down with Mary Greeley, with her and particularly Boone, on some issues of getting clients to and from. Do you know if they are able to pick up any clientele through that service? Because I haven't heard that there's continual issues, so I don't know just how that's working out.
Right. I know as a result of the Transportation Task Force, HERDA was going to do some follow-up individually with Mary Greeley. I can double-check with RSVP, but I do believe they are taking clients to Mary Greeley as well as McFarland Clinic and any outlying services, I mean, whether it's Nevada Medical Clinic, Story County Medical Center, but I do believe they are. I think the bulk of their trips, according to RSVP, have to do with medical appointments.
Thank you.
If you drop,
is there anything else?
Okay. That was good.
Okay. Yeah. If you drop down to Micah, I'm starting on line 31 there in the spreadsheet, you'll notice that the increase is recommended for their dental clinic. All their other services, the requests or the allocation remains the same as this current year, and that was how Micah structured their request. They weren't asking for any additional dollars for food pantry, family development, those kinds of services, but they were asking for a large increase with their dental clinic. They need assistance with operational expenses. They continue to get donations and grants, but those particular dollars tend to go towards funding equipment and supplies. So they're really honing in on continuing to operationalize this service. They have a full-time dentist. I think he's going on year number two now. That has made a tremendous impact on the service of having a full-time, consistent dentist. The bulk of the payer source for the dental clinic is Medicaid. And it doesn't meet all their costs. We're not supplementing Medicaid. But we are assisting with access to dental services is how I've worked it out in the contract with Micah. But that's why the bulk of that allocation is for dental services, because that's how they requested it. If you drop down to line 41, the Salvation Army, the bill payer program, there's about a 37.5% reduction. Again, that was based on the request, so we did meet their request. And line 47, Volunteer Center of Story County, their youth service learning program is a new service, and it does meet our priority for the well-being of children and families. So that's why that is at about 40% of what they've requested. And then if you drop down, starting with line 53, YSS, we get into the continued transition of those services that were in the juvenile court contract, and we've transitioned those into the asset process. And so that those services include their family development, employment assistance for youth, substance abuse prevention and education, the Community Youth Development and the Nevada Youth Service Bureau. And then Kids Club was a service that had been funded by both the juvenile court contract and ASCET. So that's a combination of the dollars there.
And I remember we had a lot of conversation about this, and there was some reluctance, I think primarily from YSS, on moving any of this out of the JCS contract. I'm interested to note that there were increases in almost every line, small increases, 3%. I guess the maximum is 8%. But I don't recall that those had been increasing at all under JCS. I think they had been very static. And so it looks to me like YSS is coming out way ahead by this transition.
That is correct. And for example, the family development education, they requested $1,500. They were funded at $1,500.
Right.
But then employment assistance for youth, prevention education for substance abuse, and community youth development, those were all 3% increases based on their request, and so we funded their increase.
But those have been static through JCS for several years.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So hopefully, over time, you know, we'll see the benefit of having these services go through the ASCET process and continue to maybe look at those other services that are still funded through the juvenile court contract and whether or not you as the board want to transition those over to ASCET eventually as well. So that does it for the general basic funds. The total amount for the recommendation is $684,696. Again, that includes those general fund dollars that had been earmarked for the juvenile court contract, and that was about $99,000. On to local option, pretty status quo there. We did give Stork's Master YSS a little more of a bump. That is a very successful program in terms of providing education and incentives for single moms or young families who are following through with WIC and well baby care. So the amount recommended through local option is $16,000. And then we drop down to public health funds, which the county serves as the pass-through for the state funds. And Mary Greeley is the only entity that gets those dollars because they are a public health agency. And that amount is $335,000 for a total of $1,035,696. Any questions or comments?
My question is overall, I'm appreciative that we were able to, I think, give reasonable increases and continue to maintain our commitment to the ASCET process. Did we see any changes from our joint funders in the way they handle things or anything that we noticed out of the ordinary this year?
No, I think it was all very, very successful. Again, this was year two for the Central Iowa Community Services region to be involved in ASCET. Actually, excuse me, their first year of kind of a standalone funder, if you will. They have three volunteers now that serve on the ASCET board, and Carla Webb is representing the region as the staff person. The total amount coming in from the region for fiscal year 17, just through the ASCET process, is $430,718. Across all funders, we're just over $4 million in allocations.
How does the 430 compare to when it was a county, still county-run dollars?
It's relatively about the same. We have a new agency coming into the process, Friendship ARC, and so they were requesting dollars for supported community living and rehabilitation, but pretty static. And the reason being is because a lot of the services now are funded through Medicaid. So where we used to be funding, you know, $200,000 to $300,000 in just outpatient services through the mental health center, that's way down because of Medicaid expansion, and most of the clients receiving services are eligible under Medicaid. So it remains relatively static. That remains to be seen as we move forward with system changes, but the region will remain on top of that.
And Deb, I'm not sure if this fits exactly here on the discussion of asset or not, but it does tie in with the region discussion. At the ASAC board meeting on Friday, Darren Raymond, the attorney that represented, presented an interesting challenge that I think I meant to have you take back to the region. It deals with employment of regional employees. And as it currently operates now, a county is kind of like the host county. If, you know, an employee is going to come under that umbrella, but he raised some questions about who ultimately has the authority to terminate employment and several other issues. And I thought that this is something that I would ask you to contact him a little bit, at least from the standpoint of having this discussed amongst the admin team and working with Carla to make sure that we have certain assurances that if any employees that are coming under Story County's umbrella that are also regional employees, that we've considered several of these legal issues out there. But currently, from what I'm aware of now, we do run these types of things through our legal counsel. But he raised a couple of them that I just told him that I was going to have you contact him and just get a little background information on, Rick. And it's just something that we as a region, since we're all funding that, and there's a likelihood that there could be employees of Story County who ultimately could later on become a regional employee, and yet they would be a part of the Story County employee pool the way the 28E agreement is currently set up. But there are other issues that I don't think we've even talked about, because technically, are they Story County employee? Do we terminate them, but yet they're doing 80% of their work as a region? Those are the kinds of things that probably need to be talked about, and I thought that if they have to dive into that, and then we know as we move forward how regional employees are going to be handled under the 28E agreements.
Yeah, I think that's a valid comment, a valid concern. As regions continue to develop and operationalize, I think they are starting to face those kinds of challenges and what that's going to look like. Here closer to home, we do run those things through the county attorney's office as well as our human resources department to make sure that we're covering the bases for the Story County employees. But I think it remains to be seen how that's all going to be structured in the near future. And I know at least in the Central Iowa Community Services region, and talking with Carla, those are things that they talk about quite often, trying to figure it out.
So what action, if any, is needed here? Is this
we need to approve the recommendations.
And I recommend the asset funding, that we approve the asset funding recommendations as presented.
Second.
Got a motion and a second to approve the asset recommendations. Is there anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Two?
Aye.
And I just want to say that I accompanied Deb in the last joint funders meeting, and it's 33 human agencies now that
31
agencies
and over 90 services.
Over 90 different services, and it's we're really fortunate here in Story County, and you guys are well aware of this. But just imagine 31 different human service agencies going to three or four different funders every year to try to before the budget needs to be set to try to get their ducks in a row. So we really appreciate all the hard work from the volunteers and everybody connected with that. So thank you.
Thank you.
Next is a discussion and consideration of the jail diversion program. Mr. Schultz.
I'm sorry. Did you do a roll call vote on that?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
All right. We're here to talk this morning about the jail diversion program. This was briefly discussed during the sheriff's budget work session a few weeks ago. And coming out of that work session, the board had asked the sheriff's office to work with Alyssa Wignall and myself and the region on what direction jail diversion services was going and how we want that structured moving forward. And I just want to say for the record, the region has been very involved in these discussions. We don't have a representative from the region here with us today, but Rick and I met with the regional administrative team about a week and a half ago to talk with them about what their goals are, what are they looking at in terms of services moving forward. And so we feel like we have a pretty good feeling with where what direction they want to go, even though we're unable to have representation from them today. So we had a couple of meetings involving Sheriff Fitzgerald, John Osmussen, and Connie Torsdahl, and Alyssa Wignall. And we had Optime staff present at those meetings as well. And I believe, yep, they're both here today as well. And so just going back quickly to the RFP that was created for the community life program services, one of the things that we included in that RFP was jail diversion. We wanted to reinstate those services. And so when Optime was awarded that contract, they started providing jail diversion services last May and have served about 30 clients since that time. And they coordinate with jail staff, you know, who's coming out of the jail, who they need to follow up with. They do go to the jail right now on a weekly basis to meet with inmates to see what the interest level is in participating with jail diversion once that inmate is released and back in the community. So we have that piece of the pie back in place. And in meeting with Optime, we talked with them about extending their presence, having more of a presence in the jail to meet with more staff, the medical staff, the detention officers, and just spending more time with the inmates there in the jail. And we think that they can do that. There's some restructuring they may need to do or some expansion of staff time they may need to do, but they're certainly willing to take a look at that and be able to provide that level. The other piece to this is the region can provide service coordination services. So the region can provide somebody to come into the jail and have more of a presence there in the jail and actually be working with those individuals who either opt out of jail diversion or are not eligible for jail diversion and can work with detention officers and medical staff on coordinating services then for those individuals and then actually be able to follow those individuals once they have left the jail environment. The region is paying for these services, and the region gets its money, part of its money, from the county. And so I think that was one of the reasons why the board wanted to have a take a look at that is, you know, are we funding essentially the same service twice? And so how can we make that a little more efficient, and with it purely looking at mental health and or substance abuse, it makes sense for the region to be that primary funder of those services. So out of that discussion, you know, we're looking at then having the region be that primary funder and look at what additional things Optime can provide, especially people coming out of the jail, and then the service coordination piece that the region can bring to the table to provide that person to be coming to the jail and working, especially then with those inmates and those staff who aren't going to be eligible for jail diversion. So those are my comments in relationship to the discussion that we have. I know we've got folks here in the room that want to chime in and provide their perspective as well.
Sure.
So are there any questions or comments the board has for me at this point?
Not yet.
Yeah, I mean, I would start by saying it feels like we're all pulling in the same direction, everybody involved, from us, sheriff, service providers, trying to have the most comprehensive and collaborative system we can have, but we need to keep in mind that we don't need to be paying for it twice out of two different locations, and now just trying to figure out the best way to get there, I think is appropriate.
Okay. Thank you.
Sheriff, you want to come up?
Please.
Thank you, Karen.
Don't have to chase you off, yes.
Sheriff, how are you doing this morning?
Doing well. Doing well. Nice, restful time back since our holiday yesterday, so back at it. First of all, I'd like to start off by thanking the Board of Supervisors. You guys have always been strong advocates in working with the Sheriff's Office as we provide services to the people in the jail that not only may suffer from a mental illness, but also from an addictions issue. And you've known that I've always advocated that we have dual diagnosis, dual recovery, and the co-occurring disorders are something that you can't look at one without the other. So I thank the board for being understanding and supportive as our mission proceeds, working with these folks in the jail. As we had a work session with Alyssa and Deb and Optime, you know, I understand where the board is going with this. And from that standpoint, I can't push back against that. I understand how you would not want to pay for the same services twice. My concern is, as we work to build this program within the jail, we have a person, at least one mental health professional that works inside the jail, and if we can have the region provide those services, that's fine. I just would not like to see those hours diminished and the same amount of hours working within the jail. As we talked with Deb and Optime, they're looking at maybe increasing the staff coming into Story County, and I have offered and strongly encouraged, however much weight that may have, to we have an office in the jail that our mental health provider works out of now. I have asked that if they get that additional person, that that person, their office be assigned in our jail. If their home base is in the jail, I believe we'll have more hours similar to what we're currently providing with a full-time staff person. And I've asked John to come up because if you'd like to ask what services on a day-to-day basis the mental health professional does, it's more than just working with those individuals that we prepare to go out into the community. It's also the individuals that may be in crisis that come in from an arrest right off the street from whatever agency makes that arrest. Issues that arise in the jail to work with the individuals to provide certain services that if we reduce the hours and somebody comes over to check to see what we have for 2 or 3 hours a day, we're going to lose a lot, in my opinion. We're going to lose a lot of those services. So with that said,
I would appreciate to have John maybe just kind of give us, you kind of hit the several of the types of things that encounter, but from a day-to-day operations and the clients that you deal with co-occurring disorders and so forth, obviously there are going to be days that you're probably not going to have as many. I think so the numbers are going to fluctuate. The question is, what are the services that a person in this position could lend to your staff and you all as you continue this program?
Okay. Right. The biggest thing is probably with our medical staff, in that a lot of times when somebody comes in, if they have those issues, is having somebody that can advocate for them and also try to get a hold of their family. It's a lot of times medication, but sometimes for us to be able to do anything, we have to have basically what their medical records are so we can give them to our doctor so our doctor can go forward, basically give them a stamp of approval saying that's what we need to do to continue. So that's a big part of it there, is being able to, sometimes that person has no idea if they're in a state where, well, we may have a family name, she can make some contacts and maybe start working with that person to get some releases signed so we can get some medical records, as well as our staff are dealing, the medical side aside, is day-to-day operations with our our staff that's in the back dealing with somebody, you start to see a signs of somebody having an issue or starting to where maybe their medication is not quite the right level, starting to show signs of mental illness or some of the things that they're having, they can let that person know who, again, will become involved, going meet with that person, interview them, talk to them, kind of counsel them, and then again make recommendations back to our medical department so we can actually continue to go with that. Now, you also have the courts, which we have just started. But in like, this is our second or third month now that we've been having her go over and actually meet with the county attorney's office on Friday as well. So now she's advocating, talking with the actual attorneys themselves that are handling the cases, that maybe we can get that person moved through the system a little bit faster, as well as the attorneys also have questions. What is our plan for this person when that person is going to get released? Do we have a plan to, for this person to get back out in the community and to have services available to them? That's another major point of that that we'd like to see us continue as well.
I'm just curious, how were those things handled when this was housed in CLP?
She came over and she would meet with them, but I don't think it ever got to the level where it is now where we can actually fill those services a lot more.
Yeah, my point is, when we moved this position from CLP into the jail, at least for me, it was with the understanding that we were talking about a continuation of the program that we had. Now, I'm one of those that I am fully in favor of making sure that we come out of this with enhanced services, with enhanced capabilities. I don't know that I equate the enhanced services necessarily with number of hours in a particular office in the jail. I want to see the services done. And, John, what I'm concerned about is it sounds to me like what you're describing right now, while great, is not something that this board ever weighed in on as a part of the program. And so if we need to be funding some services like that, super, let's have that conversation and really dig into it. But trying to tie that, so I'm going back and I'm looking at what the program was when it was with CLP and trying to make sure that when we come out of this, we're better than we were then. I'm not necessarily looking at what this thing, from my perspective, morphed into while it had somebody in jail, because I think we lost as much as we gained. Again, my perspective.
Well,
if I
hear
real quick, one of the issues that we had, and I say we, I'm not talking just Story County, Sheriff's Office across the nation, are fighting and experiencing the same problems.
Absolutely.
And what we are having is we're having detention officers who are trained as jailers, not in a position where they're trained as mental health providers.
Right.
And so, because no one is there, they're the ones who are forced to deal with these issues. And when we have someone who is a mental health provider, who is there at least 8 hours the day like we have now, Monday through Friday, they not only work with the people that are there, but can set up certain responses for when they're not there for the staff to work with them. And for staff to step in and try to intervene or mitigate in a crisis situation they're not prepared for, it puts more duties and more liability on the jail and on the staff that we have that's already at times to a burned out level. This is a position that has taken those duties off the plate of the detention officer and of the jail staff and allowed them to function more as they should be functioning as.
Absolutely, I'm with you, Sheriff, and I think I sit here and I see the value in that. It's just different than what we talked about when we moved the position originally from CLP over into the jail. We talked about moving the position as it existed at that time and continuing providing those services. And what I see is we've lost some of that. We've got an opportunity to get that side of things really back going in a comprehensive, collaborative manner. And then if we need to have the next step of the conversation, which sounds to me like some enhanced in-jail services provided, great, I'd love to have that conversation. It's just, it's a non sequitur to me to talk about what it was when it was in CLP versus what we're doing now and trying to wrap up some of these things that it became that was outside the scope of what I think we originally intended.
But part of the things that you talk about that we lost, and as I remember, was when we brought the proposal to the board, we were looking basically for a couple of people. And we weren't granted the full amount. That amount was reduced so we could bring a full-time staff person in. But the other part that we lost was we also had funding in there so we could provide life skill classes,
right,
the workbooks, things like this. That was not put into the budget. And so those are things that we've lost.
And you and I just have a different recollection of what we talked about clearly, because as I recall, our conversation was, we have this position housed in CLP. We have jail diversion housed in CLP right now. We can't continue to fund it. As the state moved into this regionalization system, we can't continue to fund it at CLP because there aren't the funds available anymore through the mental health funds. It was important to this county, clearly important to you, it was important to this board, and so we found a way to continue that position, tying different funding to it and putting it within the sheriff's office. What you're describing is great. It's just different than what I recall we talked about when we did all this. And what I'm most interested in first is making sure that our jail diversion program in Story County is second to none. And I think that requires, from my perspective, that requires a collaborative effort from the service providers, from our service coordinators. I mean, I think it, people in the jail, it requires a collaborative effort of all that. And I feel like we've lost some of that. Now, if it's beyond that, if the realities, my ultimate goal, Sheriff, would be to put the jail out of business, if at all possible, at least out of repeat business, right? We want as little repeat business as possible. And so I'm fully on board in having the conversation. It just feels like you and I are talking about apples and oranges right now.
Well, the thing that we recall was the community outreach portion where after they left the jail, that there was a trail, a follow-up, that the original CLP model was focusing on more so because they weren't in the jail on a daily basis, so it was that handoff to other service providers and so forth. So I think that was the part that maybe we didn't see as robust during this, but I think the sheriff identified that there were other needs within the jail with staff, whether it be the classes, the medical staff, relieving detention officers from some of these types of things. And so you're absolutely correct. We did not envision that that was going to be where this model was going to grow. And the other part, maybe not as robust. And so trying to coordinate both areas of that, and I think this is where the region is somewhat concerned with the service coordinator's piece, is to make sure that we have, you know, not only what happens when the person is released from jail and comes back into the community, is there services available to them that we can have some level of success that there's not going to be repeat offenders and they will be back in the
sure.
jail?
Well, so I think you make a great point, and I think it is vital, to the sheriff's point, I think it is vital that these positions, and I use the plural because I think this is more than just one person, these positions need to spend as much time in the jail as possible. The internal piece of this within the jail clearly is vital. I just think there's also an external piece of this that is vital, and finding that balance between the two. And Sheriff, what I hear you saying is, and maybe I'm hearing it wrong, and just help me if I'm hearing it wrong, you feel like it's important that from, you know, 8 to 5, somebody be in that office all the way through. And, great, I see value in that. I just don't place that at the top of the list of most important things. I view, let's make sure we have the services provided that we deem are vital, but let's have that relationship internal-external. It sounds to me like maybe when it was with CLP, it was overly external. Now I believe maybe it shifted the other way, as things tend to do. Maybe it's a little internal. Let's see if we can find that happy medium out there somewhere. But I think what I want you to know, Sheriff, is I am absolutely committed that if we need to have the conversation about more services beyond what jail diversion was originally designed to do, if we need to have that conversation as we move forward, I'm very willing to have that conversation. I just think maybe you and I are looking at two different things right now.
The point that maybe bringing it back, looking through the same set of glasses here for a second, is that our current jail diversion program, OptMe is the provider that follows the individual out into the community and for the 12 to 18 months to reconnect them to reduce recidivism. The thing that we'll be losing is that point in the jail that sets up the process for them once they leave the jail and go outside the jail.
And I'm understanding that we're adding, or that the region is adding, a service coordinator position to do just that. Maybe I'm misunderstanding.
When I started out my comments at the start, I stated that with the understanding that another person is brought in and asking that their office be made in the, you know, kept in the jail, and they work out of the jail, that might alleviate that portion of it. But the other thing I would not want to see is the person that works on the outside, that works to get the person back in services, back in the community, make sure they're in court appearance in jail, that they aren't, half of their job then is coming into the jail to set the person up and then follows them once they get outside the jail. They're already at 12 plus clients, as I understand, and about 12 is about their limit, as I understand.
Right, but as I understand, OptMe is at least considering the addition of a position, noting that there there is enough, unfortunately, enough business. Hopefully, we're getting great results from it. But I don't think you and I, Sheriff, and I just want to make sure you and I get to where we're at least able to view it through each other's eyes a little bit. I don't think we're that much different in that I see that service coordination piece as being vital. I see there as being a very necessary component for that service coordination person to be in the jail every day. I see that every single day. I just also see that there's real value in having that service coordinator in our community services area as well, because that's where they're going to network and make sure that we're getting that collaboration that we need. And so I'm not nearly as concerned. This is just me. I'm not nearly as concerned about where their, if you want to consider, permanent office is as I am. Are they getting the job done both internally and externally? And Deb, maybe you could help me out if I'm seeing this wrong, or if there's a different vision than this.
You're right.
You're correct. There's going to have to be that balance of time spent in the jail and time spent in the community, because it really is a social worker. And so if they're working with an individual who, and set up the plan to get them coming out of the jail and stuff, that may mean that service coordinator is going to have to go to Eyerly Ball and talk to staff there about getting appointments set up, or they may have to go to the community services office and check on records. I think that's kind of one of the beauties that I see with this, what this kind of model is. The days when I used to look at the jail roster, I'd recognize names, and I knew we had records on them. And so it could help from a time efficiency standpoint in recognizing those individuals. We already have those records. We don't have to spend time signing all the releases and getting all the records because we already have that. But that's going to require the person to be not sitting in a chair in the jail 8 hours a day. They're going to have to.
But I'm visualizing, and help me if I'm missing this, I'm visualizing that this job is going, in order to do this job well, it's going to require starting every day in the jail.
Yes.
And spending multiple hours in the jail. I just think there's more than that.
Right. I mean, there's going to have to be that balance of in the jail time and in the community time. And maybe once the person is released from jail, the service coordinator may have to transport them to different appointments until other transportation and other things get set up. So I think it's just, it's going to be just a matter of coordinating that and finding that balance. And as we had talked in the meetings too, even if the service coordinator is out of the jail, you know, to take somebody to an appointment or to get some records, they're still accessible. I mean, jail staff can still contact that person if something else comes up in the jail while they're outside of that environment.
Okay, when we had talked working with him, I don't think we're really saying a whole lot different than the understanding I came away from where we all talked collectively. And I understand that the person that works in the jail is going to be out. You know, and when we were talking, I used the analogy like a couple of years ago when the Board of Supervisors approved an IT person in the jail. Now, the IT person would be shared responsibility between me and the IT director, but the IT director was the primary person who overseeing that. And when there was other duties outside the jail, if they weren't needed at that point or whatever, then that person would go wherever through the county and work in that environment. I see it pretty much the same way here. There's not going to be every minute of that 8 hours that person is going to be confined to the jail because they're that busy they're seeing from inmate to inmate to inmate. But there may be days like that, but I'd say the majority is where they are going to have time to be networking with the community, to be working in the services area on other matters. But to me, it would be their primary focus. The purpose for them coming in would be into the jail. I have no problem working with other parts of the county in the services environment to provide the services. But, you know, I've always said, I'm the sheriff, and I stand up for the sheriff's office.
Absolutely.
For the jail.
As you should.
And that's what I'm doing here.
Sure.
And we want to make sure, like you, that we have the best, most robust diversion program that we can have. And we understand the financing, and financing is tight, and we want to have the best services we can. So hopefully the region will have a new person, new coordinator, that will be coming in and will give us those hours within the jail.
I think that's the goal for all of us. I think maybe if I can boil it down to the one difference that maybe you and I are having is I picture this position having two workstations, right? A workstation in the jail, as you described the office, but also a workstation within community services, which is where they're going to do some of that networking and outreach and be able to make sure that we are truly operating in a collaborative manner. And I see that, unless I'm mishearing you, Sheriff, I see that as the one small difference that you and I have.
And I've convinced that as we monitor this as we go forward, that if we believe we need more time in the jail, that's something we can come back to the board and ask for additional hours or things modified to meet our needs. And to start out with this to see where we're going to go and to evaluate this as it moves on. I understand my place in the food chain. And, you know, it's the Board of Supervisors respectfully that sets budgets, and this is a budgetary item. So at the end of the discussion and the work sessions, I will swoop smartly and charge up the hill as best we can.
I think for me it's important to recognize that this was a service that was spelled out in the RFP, and this is a service that Optima is confident that they can they can supply. I think it's also important to point out that in the event that the normal provider, that person is not available, if they're sick or if they're on vacation, Optima has the ability to send somebody else to have additional staff. And I think that's part of the equation that's missing now with the position being housed in the jail, that's your only person. So, you know, that person wouldn't have been there yesterday because it was a holiday. Or that person's on vacation, or that person's sick. And for me, I'm going to leave it to the sheriff and to Optima, if we approve this, to work out the logistics of where that person's going to be housed. I think that's the proper way to do it. And as always, this board wants to make sure that this program is a success and we can grow the program. And if down the road, a few months down the road, we decide this isn't really working out the way that we thought it was going to, then I would suspect that we'll all be back here in the setting having a discussion.
In my opinion, it's unfortunate that today's society takes those afflicted with mental health and even addictions and warehouses them in county jails. I think there's other places that can be more appropriately used for this type of treatment. And that's why I will continue to push for diverse programs within the jail. I'd very much like to get our life skills classes back, and that's, as Rick had mentioned earlier, that's a conversation we wanted to have, and maybe down the road we can get there. Things we once provided in the jail like that, I'd like to be able to get back to it, as long as the environment is the way it is, and just from a de facto standpoint, we are the one of the mental health facilities in the county. So,
yeah, absolutely. Is there any representative from Optimand that would want to add anything to this discussion?
Paul, the only thing I'll add as he's coming up is I see it, I agree with everything you just said. I just see the third prong as being a service coordinator external from Optimay, and I think the same thing is true of that service coordinator position, that while it would be one primary person, when that person was not available, there would be a secondary place to fall to, and so I'm seeing it as a kind of a three-pronged approach.
Thank you. My name is Brendan Usher. I'm Program Director with Story County for Optimay. Thank you for having us here today. As far as the external services for Optimay, we're definitely on board with amping up our staff load so that we can have somebody more present in the jail, like the sheriff said, more on rather than a one-day-a-week basis, a few days a week, to get that anybody coming into the jail with disabilities on track faster. We definitely want to amp up services as far as working with attorneys to come up with exit plans for those customers as well. So as they exit the jail, who's getting them on board, what services are going to be provided. And then if we do get the service coordinator position inside the jail, also collaborating with them to get that as more of a speedier process rather than the once a week that we're doing currently. So we're definitely on board and would like to definitely work with the sheriff's office and the jail to get that.
Okay. Thank you. Alyssa, is there any... I would assume at some point here somebody will make a motion. We just want to make sure that we get the wording correct so that there's no confusion on exactly what action the board may take today.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yes, you just want to make sure that you put in your action the direction you're going with the jail diversion, and then I'll move forward from there and work with the sheriff's office, because we do have that position that is funded out there.
Okay.
But until the board makes a decision in which way and gives us direction, then.
Okay. All right. So then I'll take a shot at it, Paul, if it's okay. I would make a motion that Story County enhance our provision of the jail diversion program with Optima and the region, including the addition of a service coordination position with this as a primary responsibility. And along with that motion, it would mean the elimination as of July 1st, 2016, of the current jail diversion position that's housed within the jail.
Okay. I think that's in Wayne.
I'll second the motion. Now, with the understanding that the idea of the service coordination or the role here, that would be similar to any other employment venue, a person, whether the region, who actually will be responsible?
As I understand, that will be a regional position, but Story County will be the employer of record of that position. And my request all along, and this is not true of 100% of the positions that were the employer of record, my request all along is, if Story County is going to be the employer of record, then that position needs to live by our policies and procedures. I continue to make that recommendation, but as I understand it, this will be a regional position, but Story County will be the employer of record.
Okay.
You did second. You did
well,
second.
Yeah. Well, we got second. Otherwise, we can't have a motion to discuss and go on with no action. So, understanding the role of the coordinator, the relationship with Optime, but my question is what happens if a service coordinator and all of this is not identified by July 1st? What's the fallback? Where do we go?
And that was one of the things, Wayne, that Rick and I talked to the region about a week and a half ago, is just the time period for this. And the region had already identified for each of the 10 counties within the region the appropriate number of service coordination staff in each county. And actually, Story County is down by one full-time coordinator. So the region's okay with proceeding with hiring somebody. It's just the timing of that. And we're waiting for this discussion to occur so we knew what direction to go to follow through on. And so this, I will be communicating this back to the region today, and then they can set up the time frame in terms of when they want to start advertising. And, if we're looking at July 1st date, I mean, it would make sense to me, and of course I can't speak for the region, but it would make sense that we get somebody hired on, within a month or two of the beginning of the fiscal year.
Yeah, it was my expectation, Wayne, coming out of those meetings, that the region would push for having the person identified and in place sometime in May, with the understanding that it would be more of a handoff rather than, cut off one day and then somebody new starts the next day.
So, in essence, the title of a service coordinator is more of a title and not necessarily a difference between what we currently right now, what is the title? Is it jail diversion coordinator? Is
what
it
was the
jail diversion case management.
Case manager.
Treatment
coordinator. Treatment coordinator. So,
and there's differences between what a service coordinator does and what that does. They're two separate things.
Okay.
Two separate jobs.
So how do we maintain some level of mental health, of assurance of mental health professional being able to serve the clients in jail?
Well, the qualifications for a service coordinator is a bachelor's degree in social work, human services, psychology, some disciplines like that, and having at least 1 year experience with different population groups. And I don't think we're going to have an issue with finding qualified people applying for the position so we can ensure the continuation of having that level of service within the jail. And additionally, having individuals who are knowledgeable of the services and resources throughout the Story County and the region. So I think we're not looking for a licensed mental health professional, because that takes on a whole different set of circumstances, but somebody who is going to have the same knowledge base as to what the current professional in the jail has.
The question or the concern that I basically have is, would be the concern, regardless of what department that we have, that if we have qualified staff with certain skill sets and there is a shift or change in programming or services, does that individual is the change more or less outside of what they could feel, or do they need to perhaps have additional training if they wanted to be a candidate for this position? In other words, I'm always concerned about how do we continue to promote opportunities for our qualified staff to do the services that we are outlined, even though we're seeing some change in the format. And so that, I don't know whether the current person would be interested in applying for one of these positions or not, or the service coordinator, whether they're eligible for it, do they have to have additional training. But that's a concern of mine, because I do hear the sheriff's concern about having a mental health professional also in the jail, working with staff, working with clients. If we decide down the road to go back and have some of the classes that were in place, who takes that responsibility type of thing? So that's kind of where I'm coming from. I do think that we do have to, I believe that it's proper for us to look at phasing out the current program as is by July 1st, but I want to make sure that we have the other components in place, and if they're not done, do we extend that operation until we do have this in position? So we're not creating a void there a couple months where there's no service.
Correct. And we want to avoid that at all costs, and I don't think there will be an issue with a timeline and having somebody.
Sure, but if the timeline doesn't work, to Wayne's point, and I think it's a great point, if the timeline doesn't work and we get into June and we're not prepared to continue providing the services, this position rests with the board, the one that we're talking about doing away. We can always extend that. I just think it's completely reasonable to say, if it's our intention to go down this road, we need to give everybody full notice as quickly as possible, and that's the reason that I put the hard and fast date on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
We've got a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Sanders.
Aye. Clinton?
Aye.
Two?
Aye.
And I'll just remark again that it's everybody's goal here today that this program is successful and continues to be successful, and that we can grow the program.
My only comment is to it. I have really appreciated the time spent with the sheriff's office and Optime staff in discussing this, and I'm glad we're actually on this side of discussing of wanting to enhance a program versus not have a program at all, because I do think it's really become part of our continuum of services here within Story County in the region. Optime is looking at providing similar kinds of services in other counties in the region, so I think we're really going down the right path and can set this in motion and make
well, Deb, you're 100% right. Not only is it the right thing to do, I love it when the right thing to do is also the most cost-effective thing to do. It's absolutely the right thing to do. But the reality is, and the sheriff knows this as well as anybody in America, the reality is the cost associated with not trying to provide these services is much greater than the cost associated with providing the service. So for me, it's a win-win. I'm just trying to look for the best way for Story, best, most reasonable way for Story County to do it, and share a complete commitment from me that if you want to have further conversations, let's have further conversations.
Okay. Thanks, everybody, for all your time and effort.
So walk this
one. Okay. Next, consideration of agreement between ISU Research Park and Story County for development and operations of Phase 3 of the ISU Research Park. Mike Cox.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
And,
okay.
With me today is Steve Carter, Nate Easter from the Research Park to answer any questions that you guys may have. Thank you for the opportunity to come back and chat with the board about this program. This is a program that I think you all are very aware of, something we've been discussing for quite some time. And so I'm going to focus on brevity today and not go through a full presentation on the project. You guys have seen that in the past. However, just to remind everyone of let's see, where we were and how we got to today. You saw a presentation last summer, last fall perhaps, this presentation right here. And I'm not going to go, like I said, I'm not going to go through all of this, but I do want to go to this map right here, and I guess use this as to explain some of the differences. Last fall, or last summer, when we had this conversation about the agreement, we did not take action on it at that time because we were still working through some issues with the research park and identifying the land that would be transferred to the county. And in particular, this property right here, which has the old house on it, is one that we were originally considering being part of that land that would transfer to the county. However, that is not, and we were working through that process at the time. So I want to thank Steve and Nate for their work and on our behalf on hearing our concerns for this area of the park and addressing those concerns with their with the tenant in that park. As it stands, we were very concerned about the ability to do stream bank restoration on this portion of that stream, as well as this stream right here. So that there's two small streams that intersect right about here, and we were very concerned that, again, we had the ability to do that restoration on both pieces of those of the stream. And so with that knowledge, the Research Park folks went to work in trying to negotiate, trying to decide how that they can accommodate that and still accommodate the desires of future tenants in this location. So the resolve that you'll see today, and you'll see in your packet, the plat does identify this parcel being held separate, so that parcel would not be transferred to the county. There is a lot line west of that creek. I believe that's 75 feet west of, it's either 50 or 75 feet west of the creek. And then there is also this shaded line represents an easement on the north side. And that's a 75-foot easement from center line. So I think that both of those combination between what would if this board decides today to move forward with this project, what would become fee title county property here, and then what would become easement right on this side with the research park. Both of those concerns are met. The other thing we didn't know at that time is the resolution of this property right here. That property at that time was privately held, and now the research park owns that property as well. So, I guess what we're here to ask today is that the supervisors consider partnering with the research park now on a project that would design a future county park in this area, take title to that property, work with the research park, work with others on implementing on this site, implementing best management practices for stormwater management, for stream bank stabilization, for natural resource restoration, and for environmental education or interpretation. This is a, I really think that this is a unique opportunity. And, you know, we've done a little bit of research, and I know that Steve and Nate can probably address this a little bit better than I, but there are very few, if any, research parks out there in the nation that have this kind of relationship. And so I really appreciate the Research Park folks for coming to the county and having that forethought to think about, on one level, how can we partner with the county to provide, to make our project more marketable, number one. Number two, not necessarily in this order, to protect the resources on the property and further enhance the resources on the property. And three, being tremendous value to the community. I think that this project does all of those and then some, and is really a project that I know the more we start to get involved with it and have some preliminary discussions here of what can or can't happen and the kind of the potential of this, frankly, get more and more excited about. That this can be an outdoor learning lab, a teaching facility, whatever you may call it. But we can demonstrate things on this site that can be put into place as far as best management practices from research or from a resource standpoint can be put into place across the state in years down the road. And this can be a training ground. We have all of the elements in the community to accomplish that, from our partner organizations like the university to other agencies like the Department of Natural Resources, IDOLS, DOT as well. All of those people are coming to the plate with this project and are at the table for how this project moves forward and how we fully utilize this site. So with that, I'm going to be brief here, like I said, and I don't know if Steve or Nate have anything you'd like to add?
Well, all I think I'd like to add is a thanks to the Conservation Board and the effort that they have put into this idea. It has, when we created the master plan for this expansion of the park several years ago, we knew we wanted to create a unique environment. We wanted to create something that was going to have a lasting impact on the economy. And we also understood there were a number of pieces of this that really aren't in our expertise. And a part of it was this natural area that we knew we wanted to have some recreational opportunities. And as Mike has said, what the Conservation Board and Mike and his staff have brought to us is a huge amount of expertise in looking at this opportunity and developing it. And we can't thank them enough for the efforts that they put into that. And it really, the ideas of bike paths and how it'll tie into the into a system throughout the county, those are things that now we take back and talk to our clientele, the folks that we work with day to day, and they're tremendously exciting. And yesterday I was driving into work and weather was crummy and the snow and the ice, and yet sitting on the bike path across the street from where I was turning into the office are five people who work at Workiva on their bikes in winter gear. These are the kinds of things that will change this area, will create job opportunities and excitement, keep people in Story County for years and years to come. So we really appreciate all the effort and your consideration now of this, what I think is really a unique and wonderful project for the area.
Steve, what are the projections on once build out is completed, a number of jobs in the research park? Where are we now and what are we projecting?
We're at about 1,500, 1,600 jobs right now. That will grow, we think, over the next couple of years to 2,000. All built out, we'll get to about 6,000. Those estimates are based on the density of construction and the density of employees in the current buildings.
Okay. And as I look at this agreement, it looks to me like this agreement, if adopted, commits the county, it spells it out in nine things, but basically that the county would go in and build out this natural area, including trails and bridges and wetlands and natural species of vegetation, and we would agree to maintain it. The flip side of that is the property becomes the county's property, and the research park is agreeing to put in several required features on that property, a couple wetlands and a few things like that. doesn't talk about how the county is paying for any of that. I think it gives the county 4 years to have it done. And I just want to make sure we get all this on the record. But it doesn't say how the county's paying for this. It just says the county will commit to doing this.
Correct.
Well, let me bring up a couple of points. I've given this a lot of thought, and although we're all three elected by or at large to serve in Story County, I'm the guy that lives out in that unincorporated area. The comments that I get and the comments that I'm going to continue to receive are, why would Story County spend over $2 million to build a county park that's wholly located in the city limits of Ames? And I've thought a lot about that. And I guess for me, I have to look at it that it's more than a county park. And Mike, you talk about this a lot, about how it's going to be an educational and a learning center. And if anybody doesn't realize how important stream bank stabilization, water quality issues are, you've had your head in the sand for quite some time if you live here in Iowa. One of my concerns is, and Rick pointed this out, that if we approve this agreement, this board hasn't spoken at all about funding. But if this agreement's approved, then we're going to have that conversation.
Sure. And let's just be clear. I mean, I'm not trying to hide anything or pull any punches.
Sure.
The conversation we're going to have is, do we utilize some of the capacity that we have in our current urban renewal area, TIF funding, in order to pay for something like this? That's not the only option for paying for this. That is just what I feel like is the best option for paying for this. And as I understand the timeline, this is the first step in multiple steps to getting to that. And that conversation, assuming we move forward here, would occur over the next several months. Is that right, Mike?
Yeah, I believe we'd have that discussion over the next 3 months.
Sure. And so let's just be really, really clear. Ultimately, that's where I'm going to try to push this board to go. But I recognize that, and what I want to point out is, there's no commitment to that by agreeing to this. The agreement here is, this is bigger than just a county park. This impacts more of our citizens than really anything else we've done through conservation, or potentially impacts more of our citizens. And it's the first step in the process. But I don't want anybody to feel like that if this gets approved, it automatically means anything else happens.
Right.
It's a commitment to finding a way to do it. I happen to think that TIF funding is the appropriate way to do it, but that's part of the bigger conversation.
Right. And the other question I have is, and it may seem a little silly, but one of the paragraphs talks about limited parking. Now, if you get in your car and you live in Ames and you drive to Dakin's Lake, you're probably not going to have to worry about finding a place to park to enjoy what the county has to offer up there. I want to make sure that that's true for somebody that gets in their car in Zering and wants to drive down to the research park with their family and enjoy this area. And when I read limited parking will be available along one of the streets within the research park, I get a little bit concerned.
I think you're probably familiar with this this area right here. I guess I call it the hub facility, but
that'll work.
There might be a more correct name for it. But at any rate, this facility here, which is now under construction, the idea for parking is that this loop around here is the primary parking area.
Okay.
And that will be shared. Shared with users of the facility, employees, as well as users of the park.
Okay. And the conservation board's talking about, and they're comfortable with what will be available.
Yes.
Okay.
Ultimately, Paul, I think it's a great concern, because ultimately I see this as a potential destination. If you decide you want to ride bikes around Ames, or ultimately if we can do some connectors, which I know is part of this, start there and be able to ride through Story County, or just spend the day in what will be a very cool natural area without getting too far away from home, I think parking is a very real issue. But I think it's bigger and broader than just what's going to be available at the hub, because as I believe, as there's build out in this, there's going to be more and more parking.
There's not only is there going to be more and more parking, but there are going to be services and activities that we hope help to create a whole feel. So restaurants and places where folks can get food and sit outside. And you know, for many years we operated very much like an industrial park. People came there, they worked, they left. This is something very, very different, and it is it's been challenging for me to really get my arms around at times, but this becomes a part of the community. We want the community to come there. That's why we're so excited about these improvements, because they'll bring people from all over. We already know that the folks that are living all over this county are the people that are working at this research park. We have here in Nevada, I took a look at a survey we did of about half the companies. There's 30 people in Nevada that work at the research park. There's over 20 up in Roland Story City area. In Huxley, there's another 15, 16, including old Nate here. So if you look around, there are 48% from this survey of the folks that work at that park live somewhere else. And those, that's what this place is all about. Yeah. Is, you know, not everybody's going to live and drive and work and leave. This is a place to bring the community, but also for those young folks, it's going to create an environment where they're excited. They can walk out the door, hop on their bike, go do whatever it is they do, go grab a sandwich, be back to work, and that's, it's a different environment, and that's why the work that Mike and the Conservation Board, the city, you folks, Iowa State, have said from the outset, from the beginning with this, the only way we get this done and create something really different is working together, and that's what's great about
that. Well, I love collaboration. I mean, I think that's the way we get a lot of things done, and I've appreciated, Steve, your leadership on the collaborative nature of this. I think it is a fair, some would call it a critique. I would actually call it a positive. I think it's a really fair assessment that what we're talking about doing here is not, you said, these are not part of research parks. You know, I go further than that. These are not part of commercial parks anywhere. I mean, this is outside the box thinking, I think, in a really positive way. Paul, I think you were 100% right when you started your remarks to say water quality issues are not going away. And this gives Story County an opportunity to do one of the things Story County does best, and that is be a leader, be out in front of things. And so I'm enthusiastic about it, and so that we can keep moving, I'm going to move approval of the agreement between ISU Research Park and Story County for development and operation of Phase 3 of the ISU Research Park.
I'll second the motion. The motion and second. Is there further discussion?
My remarks are that as a liaison to the Conservation Board, I've been privy of following this all the way through the process. The work that Mike has done, the Conservation Board, the numerous meetings with Steve and members of Research Park, clearly it's hard to put in words in terms of the diligence, the efforts that were put in. The Conservation Board saw some things that, you know, they went back to the Research Park, had conversations. They were having a meeting of the minds, and when you can get that collaboration, it's truly a partnership. It's not one entity against another entity, and I think they saw the tremendous educational outreach, the water quality, the bank stabilization, the tying this into outdoor recreation with the trails further south and so forth. To me, I have really become very excited about a legacy for Story County, Iowa State University, the City of Ames, the Western Conservation Department, playing an integral role, particularly in this phase, as you've already mentioned, So I want to applaud everybody's effort. I remember, was it 3 years ago, maybe we first had that little meeting over at your area, and just kind of conceptual review, and to see how this has all come together right now, I think is really something that we can all look back in future generations and look back with great pride. So I feel very good about where we are, and I know that we will, you know, reach the and have that discussion about how do we come up with the funding that's going to be necessary, and how what that saves in over a 1, 2, or 3 year period, because the development of this is not something that's going to happen in one year period. It's going to take some time expansion. So.
I think you're right on the money. I think this is a great project. I think that this does a lot of wonderful things, and I believe that it is the county's role to be part of things like this, even a really, really small part of the total project here. But if anybody thinks it was easy to get to this point, I mean, you know, Mike and Steve both had hair when we started this. It has not been easy to get to this point. I'm happy that we're here. And we'll see where the vote goes, and then hopefully we've got a lot more work to do.
Okay. Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Two? Aye. That's been approved.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Mike gets the state put for his quarterly report. So are you going somewhere, or did you wear that just for us?
Just for you.
That doesn't feel. That doesn't feel just.
That's not
really honest.
Here.
No.
Just that same report I heard the other day.
All right. Well, what a better picture to start out with my report on than picture from last Saturday. This was a ice fishing derby that Zeering Fire and EMS put on, and what a tremendous! I tell you, that community has just embraced our park up there in open arms, and is really, really doing a fantastic job. So, of course, the fire department there says, well, we got a new lake in our backyard. We probably ought to have some ice rescue gear, and we love fishing, so what a better combination than to do a fundraiser for ice rescue gear and have a fishing derby.
How many months have you been on the job that you and I went up there to visit with them about things like? It was early in your tenure.
Early on.
And I love the way the community of Zeering has embraced this, but it is this whole project. You want to talk about how a project can impact a community and instill some community pride. They bought in. They've done a wonderful job. But without this project, where Zeering was 6 or 7 years ago compared to where it is today, and more importantly, where it's headed, is phenomenal, and everybody involved ought to be really, really proud of the impact we've had on Northeast Story County.
Yeah. So there were about 150 people out there fishing, and I think the high for the day was maybe 10 degrees somewhere. It was pretty cool.
Anybody catch anything?
Maybe 14, but lots of fish were caught. There's one of the fish that was caught. It's a young lady that lives in Zeering. The other one was a young boy from Hubbard. So they came from all over to come to this event. And they have probably, we didn't keep track on the number. This was a catch and release tournament because the fishery is so young. Brand new lake, and so the fish are just getting established. The largest bass was 17-inch bass. The largest, that was pretty good. The largest bluegill or crappie was 9.5 inches. So,
and now, help me remember this, because I think this is a cool story. As part of building it out, we stocked, but we stocked with really young, small stock, and the community did multiple fundraisers in order to put some more mature stock in the lake. I would imagine there's very few lakes this age that are producing a 17-inch bass.
Correct. Yeah, and that 17-inch bass, that's kind of an anomaly. Is that it's too big to be one of the brood stock that was put in there early, so it's got to be one of those hatchery fish, but boy, that's a fast grower, because normally that group right now is anywhere from 12 to 14 inches, not up there at 17.
It's all clear water.
It's clear water, good, lots of bluegill to eat, and anyway, just tremendous. And yeah, the community raised $25,000 for fish.
Right.
And so when a small community like that can get behind a project and raise that amount of money, that's incredible. So, and it shows. It shows with their support of the lake. So moving on then, I'll just leave that picture up there. A couple of the other projects that we're working on right now, I think that was here, and we discussed acquisition of a new property on south along the Skunk River south of Ames. We refer to that as the Valdez property. We have not named that yet. However, that property has been purchased by the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation on our behalf. And recently I've met with representatives of Story County Chapter of Pheasants Forever, the Outdoor Alliance of Story County, and the Student Pheasants Forever Chapter, and along with Iowa Natural Heritage folks. And so we have a fundraising campaign that will be kicking off here soon. We've got a preliminary commitment for $100,000 from the DNR to go into that project. That leaves the rest of our ask at about $450,000. We anticipate going after some grant funds for the majority of that, and the balance will be a commitment from those partner organizations to do public fundraising. So we're moving forward with that project now. Another land project that came about shortly before the end of the year. We were approached by another landowner to acquire a parcel north of Nevada. That's about a 50-acre parcel, and we referred them to Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. They did make that purchase, and so INHF now owns that property as well. The owner sold it for half of the appraised value, so gave them a 50% bargain sale on it. Tremendous sale. And so that's another property that you'll probably hear me come back at some point and discuss that one as well. But Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation is in the process of raising money for that as well, and they've already been doing pretty good on donations for that property. So, I guess just to further the research park discussion, we have met with DOT on several occasions, and they do have a need for some mitigation. You will see probably in the coming weeks a 2080 agreement coming forward with DOT. They need to do some stream bank mitigation for one of their road projects, and so we've agreed to have that mitigation done as part of our stream bank work on this site. So we'll move forward with that. In addition, speaking of partnerships and collaboration, boy, the university is just so excited about many parts of the university are so excited about the research park development. We've got classes coming out of the woodwork wanting to get involved in that. And I think it was just last Friday, I was critiquing a landscape architecture class, fourth year class, on they're taking the project on and doing some design work and doing kind of a park master plan for us. So they're moving forward on that. We've got a stream bank ecology class that wants to work on it as well. as well as a forestry class. So lots of classes are getting involved with that, and again, it's just proof that, you know, we really want to use this as a learning opportunity, and not just for visitors of the park, but for all aspects of development here. So lots of excitement from university on that. Hickory Grove Lake, I'll chat about that just briefly. I think you're all aware that we're moving forward as we can with watershed improvement there. We have been having discussions with the Department of Natural Resources, and particularly the Lakes Restoration Project Program, and they've got some funding available for us to do some more lake improvement, water quality improvement. So we're planning a phase two and a phase three. Phase two would have more shoreline armoring. It would do some erosion control, some gully stabilization. And then phase three later on would do fisheries work, some dredging perhaps, maybe another jetty, construction of another jetty, that kind of work. So phase two, we've got about $450,000 coming from DNR to do that. That would match if the supervisors, if you'll approve the FY17 budget. We had a little bit of money in there to go toward match on that $450,000. So that's being leveraged nicely into more than $500,000 project there, and that would be phase two. Next, this project that you're looking at on the screen, let me move it forward one more. This is the before picture. This is the Jeanette Heritage Area, south of Nevada along S-14. You may not recognize this, those of you that have been there, but all of this area was tree, and the Indian Creek runs right through here. You can just barely see a little bit of it at the top of that picture. And then you see remnants of an old channel that ran through here. This is an oxbow. They got cut off, just the normal river meander, the oxbow got cut off from the channel and silted in. We worked with the Fish and Wildlife Service and the DNR to do a restoration project on that oxbow. So first we had to go in and clear the trees. This was done last fall. And back up a little bit. And then this is the picture from just a couple weeks ago. So this has been done. We had a contractor that came in and did that work. And so you see, obviously, they got down and restored a little bit of water. The creek was high at that time, so they did get some flow into that oxbow. So we'll get that seeded down, and that'll be a tremendous kind of a backwater area for fish, for invertebrates. It'll be a tremendous area. It'll be a nice spawning area for fish. So that's a tremendous project. In addition to this, we are the same contractor that will be doing a wetland project. We let that at the same time, and the wetland project will happen just upstream a little bit from the oxbow. So let's see. Next one, you have and I know this is a little bit hard to see. Shelly, can you hit the lights on this one? This is some damage we had along the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail. This is actually a concrete culvert. You can just see that this is the flared end section of it. This is along the culvert here. This is about a 10-foot diameter concrete culvert, and it's about 70 feet long. So this culvert failed. We have all of this erosion that happened last summer, and so now we have to get in there and reset that culvert, essentially, and that will be happening here in the spring, I hope. So, assuming we get some good quotes on getting this project done, but this culvert won't last very much longer in this condition. Other than that, speaking of repair work, we... this, I guess it was December, he noticed that we had a plugged outlet pipe on a pond we have at Robinson Wildlife Acres. It's a small pond there, and the culvert, or the outlet, plugged. And we find out that that's an original outlet, original culvert that was probably built in the 60s. And so the culvert is failing. The metal pipe is rusting through, and so we've got to get in and fix that. So we're working with DNR on some solutions on doing that, and we'll probably be asking for a grant to move forward with that project as well. But no pictures of that one. And then, I guess lastly, just talk a little bit about our environmental education program. We've had a little bit of snow this year, and so we've been able to use some snowshoes that we purchased with donations. And we bought 60 pairs of snowshoes, some adults and some youth, and we've had, I think, four snowshoe hikes so far. They fill up right away. People love it, and we can't do enough of those. Although we don't have a lot of snow to work with, they find the snow and really enjoy those snowshoes. And so we got them. They're available for people.
Come to the board and want us to put a snow making machine in so we can have fundraising activity out there where we can get some more revenue. Huh?
There you go. There you go. I'll let you bring that idea forward, Wayne.
Okay.
Well, at any rate, everything's going really well. We did also environmental education program got a grant from REAP Continuing Education Program as a part of the overall REAP project. And the grant was for establishing a pollinator garden at Nevada Central Elementary. So it was a pilot project. And we received that grant. We're doing that, and now we've got other schools coming forward wanting to us to work with them as well. So we'll iron out the kinks with Nevada Instance, and then if this is a successful project, then we'll move forward trying to find some other grants, et cetera, to put some other pollinator gardens in at schools. So that is all I have for you today.
Tell Quaker to come get his mower.
I see that.
He's been working with that for a week. So. Thanks, Mike.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Public forum number 2, comments from the public on items not on this agenda. The board may not take any action on the comments through the requirements of the open meetings law, but may do so in the future. I see anybody moving towards the mic. Liaison assignments to committee meetings. Wayne?
Tomorrow I have two meetings in Des Moines. HERD board is having a special meeting. We're talking regarding the transportation opportunities and signing the contract for the managed care organizations. And then COSTAR, which is the County Strategic Technology Group, we are finalizing our strategic plan that will be presented to the ISAC Board of Directors a little bit later. And then on Friday, I will be leaving for D.C. To attend the National Association of Counties Legislative Conference. We've got visitations on Monday and Tuesday with all of our congressional delegation. And there's some excellent seminar meetings that I'll be sitting in on one of the Environmental Energy Land Use Steering Committees as well. And then I will not be here next Tuesday. So you and Rick will handle that, and I think that is claims week for us, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. So, but other than that, that's about what I have going. Oh, and I would like to at least mention former Auditor Mary Mosman presented on fiduciary responsibilities to the supervisors last Thursday. Just did an outstanding job, as she normally does. And I did bring a copy of that presentation that she has just to share with you guys and so forth. But that was a highlight, as well as the managed care organizations presented to us and shared a positive message about where they are today and how they hope to continue to roll out this. There was still skepticism in the audience. As you well know, there was a Senate, the Democratic-controlled Senate actually voted to repeal that. Obviously, it's not going to go anywhere, but that's going to continue to be something that we're going to hear a lot about the managed care organizations as we move forward. And then I had one other comment. It was the Senator Liz Mathis sent out an email last Thursday. Our Children's Mental Health gave its presentation to the Senate committee, and she says that now that this has gone before the Senate and the House, the Human Resource Committee is now going to take this up in the fact that there will be floor debate. And we're hopeful that they will see fit to come up with this $300,000 funding stream to help have a couple of regional centers to deliver children's mental health services. So that's it.
Busiest man in Story County.
He is busy. No liaison assignment. Pass.
Me either. Announcements, Wayne.
That's it.
Renee, a couple things. Last week I attended the dinner put on by Roger Underwood and Jeff Becker, gathering about 100 people to talk about non-obvious or outside-the-box ideas to improve Ames, Story County. It was a little contest, and the winning non-obvious idea was the acquisition of the Manats gravel pit right there on the southwest corner of 35 and 30, and turning that into some kind of park, be it city, county, some kind of park. Don't know that that goes anywhere from there, but I, you know, it's something that, I've talked about in the past and something I think we ought to keep on our radar. I think thanks to Wayne, I'm part of the statewide supervisors task force looking at water quality issues with what the governor's proposed and where that thing is going to head. I'll try to keep you guys, I know I'll forward you a couple emails and some documents. I'll keep you guys informed. Long and short of it is, clearly, I think there is broad agreement that there needs to be some dollars available for water quality issues, both drinking and runoff. The question is, where do they come from, and how would they be allocated? And so I'm going to try to play a really active role in that. And then finally, later today, Deb and I are meeting with Mary Greeley Hospital just to really try to move the conversation about a mental health crisis center forward, and so we'll see where that conversation goes.
Okay. And I'll pass.
Second motion.
Move.
Second.
Motion in the second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We're adjourned.